Well, baby, come on, let me take you out tonight, where the music is pumping and the lights are bright. The whistle blows and the workday's done. We're gonna get the party started and have some fun. Meet me after midnight, baby, don't be late. Down around the corner at the Empire State. The kids are getting down up in the Bronx tonight.
Hello, this is Aaron from Power Papaholic, and I am talking today with Willie Nile, who is a troubadour singer-songwriter who's been around the New York scene for well over 50 years and has a new album out called New York at Night. So how are you doing today, Willie?
I'm doing good, Aaron. Thank you, all things considered. I'm in Greenwich Village. You know, I'm bunkered down, trying to take care as best I can, isolating as best I can.
Great. Great to hear.
I've got my guitar. I got a piano. I can see the sky, so it could be worse.
Yeah, and this gives you a lot of time for extra songwriting, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Sure.
In times like these, that comes in handy, you know, it's helpful. You know, these are hard times for everybody, and for me, you know, music is something I gravitate to, you know, when I'm feeling whatever I'm feeling.
Yeah.
You know, times, bad times, so it's really useful in a time like this.
Absolutely. I am actually a newcomer to you. I mean, I've heard of you before, but I rarely didn't listen to too much of your music until this week, and I discovered I really, really like you. You fit into this really nice space between, and I know this has been referenced many times, between Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan, and you're sort of like in the middle there, but I think you have a better voice than either of those guys, and you also got a little bit of Lou Reed in you, too. Which I kind of love, and you know, so it's for me, it's a sweet spot, and I encourage people who have not heard from you, and I'm sure there are some, to listen to your back catalog, which is phenomenal. But
thank you.
Yeah, one of the things that I really liked is the fact that you were a very clear storytelling songwriter, very much like the late Kenny Rogers, who just recently passed. You really get to the heart of what the story is. It's so descriptive. It's really well thought out. Can you tell me a little bit about, since you're an observational lyricist with your music, has your technique changed at all since your debut 40 years ago?
Well, first of all, thank you for all those kind words. I love, you know, Dylan's voice and Bruce's voice, you know, and, I'm just happy to be able to be, you know, croaking away on my own and enjoying it as much as I do. My writing changed, I think that, not really. I think that after years of writing, if I get an idea, I kind of have a better idea, a sense of what to pursue and what to not waste my time on, you know. But the process is pretty much the same for me. I don't sit down and try to write a song. I just don't work that way. You know, if I'm walking down the street or I get an idea, I'll put it on my phone or I'll write it down on a napkin or something. Or if it's a guitar lick or something or a melody, I'll put it on my voice memo on my phone. You know, but I wait till the inspiration comes to me, and if I hear something, like, boom, that's a song, I'll know right away, that could be a song, and I'll just pursue it, whether it's with guitar or piano. So I just kind of wait till they come to me, the ideas, the inspiration, and I never try to force it. I just let it come. I find it's more productive and effective that way, instead of trying to sit and write something.
Great. Well, you know, another thing I noticed through listening to some of your music in the past and now is that you're amazingly consistent and you haven't really bent so much stylistically to the times. I think the closest I can think where you basically had a little bit more gloss on your music than usual was the album Places I Have Been. But everything else pretty much has stayed, you know, you could tell a Willie Nile song when you heard it, and it wouldn't matter if it was, you know, 1980 or, you know, 2020. It you know, has that distinctness. Did you ever feel pressure to change your sound with the times? You know, we're talking going through the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s here.
Not really. I mean, I like things. I like it raw. I like it when it's real. If you can capture character on a recording, you know, whether that's a guitar sound or a vocal performance, you know, if the song is there, for me, it's all about the song. If the songs have, you know, if the songs are any good or have some content or character, and if you can just get that across, I don't like overdoing something. I'd like it just to be, you know, two guitars, bass, and drums, sometimes keyboards, you know, and just pretty raw and rocking, you know, and I like big choruses, I like anthems, but I like all kinds of stuff, something simple and empty and, you know, far out in the woods or far out to sea, you know, or else something in a stadium. You know, I like all of the above, and I've never really felt pressure to try to change what I do. It's you know, I kind of follow my heart, my instincts. You know, I've always found that that's led me to the best places when I'm making a record, decisions that we make along the way, or when writing songs or putting a collection together. Those decisions that I make along the way, I kind of go by the seat of my pants, you know. Right. And you know, I love guitars. I love rock and roll.
Yeah,
that's music that has passion.
That seeks into my next
from a real place.
Yeah, that seeks into my next question, which is, you know, normally I interview rock and roll artists and power pop artists. And when I listen to some of the things, obviously some of the stuff you do is not power pop, but there were other songs in your catalog that are definitely power pop, like songs in the past, like Grenade and She's So Cold. I would consider those power pop songs, you know, catchy, very strong chorus, very, very, you know, sticks in your head, you know, kind of ability. And that's what I consider power pop for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I think you know, some of your music definitely falls in that category. Tell me about this new album now. You know, there was I see, you know, there are some other instances or where you do have other influences creeping in on the edges, around the edges, like, you know, I detected a little bit of world music influence in the song Lost and Lonely World a little bit, you know, and things like that. And do you have, I ask this of every artist and you don't have to answer, do you have a favorite on this album that means something very personal to you?
I'm so happy and excited about how this album came out. It's hard to pick a favorite, you know? I mean,
I know.
The title track, New York at Night, you know, the story behind that is I was in the subway. Mm-hmm. It was a Friday night. I was in Times Square. I went to, there's a venue there called, it's Les Paul's Club. Can't remember the name of it right now. I think it'll come to me. But anyway, I was at a club seeing some music in Times Square. And at 10:30 at night, I get in the subway. I go down the subway to head down to the village back home, and it was mildly crowded. And I get in the, I start to walk into a subway car, and as I approach the door, I notice a can of whipped cream on the floor of the car near a guy's foot, and I like Ready Whip, and I went, "What the? What is?" And I noticed that right away that his feet, his legs, and the thighs completely covered in whipped cream, and I couldn't see his upper body. You know, as I stepped on, I just looked away like, what the heck? This guy was covered in whipped cream from what I saw the waist down, and I just went to the other side of the car and kind of went, okay, you know, one of New York's oddities, you know. And when I got out of the subway car, I just was thinking about, man, I don't know what that was about. And as I walked up the you know, came up from the underground, up the West 4th Street subway station. It was a busy Friday night. People from all over the place, all kinds of people, you know, rich, poor, homeless, tourists, you name it. It was just a sea of characters from as far as you could see. And I just thought, wow, New York at Night, what a place. And right away, it hit me, New York at Night, that could be a good song. That could be a song, you know. And right away, I started writing it. You know, I walked home a few blocks, and I had the first two verses. And I raced upstairs and got my guitar and wrote it. There's so many songs that inspire me on the album. The Doors of Paradise, you know.
Yep.
A little bit of love goes a long, long way. You know, Lost and Lonely World. New York is Rockin', the opening track. The album's called New York at Night, and New York City has always inspired me. You know, I've mm-hmm. lived in the village, Greenwich Village, many years. I love being here. You know, the energy, the grit, the mystery of it all, the history, you know, it fills my heart with wonder, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I realized when I wrote that song that night, as collections start to form on their own, there'll be a few songs that anchor it. And I knew right away when I wrote that song that night, I thought, because I had already had New York is Rockin' written, you know, and mm-hmm. a number of the songs have New York City references, the Backstreet Slide, The Fool Who Drank the Ocean, you know, Avenue C. A lot of them are very New York street songs. And even the love songs, like The Last Time We Made Love, you mm-hmm. know, that's all that stuff. These songs are most of the songs were written in New York or were inspired by it one way or another, you know. And what they have in common is that they reflect my life and experience living in New York. It's like, kind of like seeing the world through the keyhole of New York City. You know, I love the album, and I love the whole thing. I mean, every single song I hear it and go, man, we got that one, and man, yeah. The band, I've got such a great band, and they all brought their A game. And we recorded the album, as we always do. We're all set up live in the studio, playing along at once. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be in a booth with my playing electric guitar and singing. So on some of them, you can hear, you know, the click of the strings on the vocal mic. And I would say maybe of the 12 songs on here, 9 of them, they're live vocals. You know, when we cut the track, we just kept it.
Nice.
Word for word, you know. And so they're very much live performances. I find that the energy you can capture that way just is a little more exciting and genuine.
Yeah, this is it's incredible. The musicianship on this album, and I have to say, really, your catalog is superb. You can't really find a lot of, you know, what I would call filler anywhere in your catalog, which is unique for an artist like yourself. I wanted to ask... You know, go ahead.
When it comes to that, I'll tell you, I'm real, you know, I'm strict about it. I don't forget filler. That's not what I do. You know, if I love a song, I believe in it, you know, then I'll consider it, but I knock all kinds of songs off. No, not good enough, not good enough. You know, mm-hmm. I do every one, and I'm committed to each one. No filler, I don't want filler. I won't go into the studio to make a record unless the songs are all written and I feel really confident about them and believe in them. So, yeah, no filler here.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the songs I wanted to ask about is The Fool Who Drank the Ocean. Is that about any person in particular or a particular bar in New York?
Well, it's... And not in particular. It's just a general. That's definitely a New York inspired street flavored song. You know, mm-hmm. It could be anywhere. It could be anybody. Anybody comes to New York, it's a fool. You know, like I'm speaking in my voice, like I'm the fool. Whoever it is, mm-hmm. People come to New York. So many people come from around different parts of the world, states. You know, they come for different reasons, for artistic reasons, to, you know, get their work out there, whether musician, songwriter, poet, playwright, painter. You know, or architects, you know, business people, whatever. You come to New York and you know, try to make it here. And this kind of song, like the way the second verse, you know, I found success. You know, I found success as a slave. You know, when I first came, what's the line? It goes, since I came to the city, I found success as a slave. But for a moment, could you refrain from dancing on my grave? You know, it's tongue-in-cheek. It's supposed to be fun and just a good old rock and roll song somewhere between the
Town
and the Stones.
Oh, no, it's great. How would you contrast this album, New York at Night, versus Streets of New York? Is it sort of like you'd say, like everything? Because I know New York is a theme throughout your entire discography. And, you know, but there are different aspects to it, and both in place and in time. So I'm asking, is there, is this really more like a timely look, like a capsule of New York, you know, now, as opposed to, you know, Streets of New York, which was done quite a while ago?
Interesting, yeah. Streets of New York was 2006, and this is 2020. I guess they're little time capsules in their own way. Each a little different. You know, I mean, that was a long time ago. I've learned a lot in the studio and recording. Mm-hmm. But, again, for me, it always gets back to the songs. You know, I love the songs on Streets of New York. I'm really proud of them. And the songs on New York at Night, this new one, is kind of like volume two of my New York, you know, epistles. But I love the city. You know, it just inspires the hell out of me. There's an energy here when I leave it. Like, if I go across the bridge, or leave it by a tunnel in a car, or, you know, on a boat, you can sense the energy, like, just lower a little bit, you know, like it's more chill when you get across the rivers. And I've read a number of times in the New York Times, a couple articles over the years, that the granite that is beneath Manhattan is a particularly high conductor of electricity. Well, I feel it. I just love the city, and both albums, Streets of New York and New York at Night, are love, you know, really basic, my love songs to the city. Yeah, I've learned so much. It's taught me so much. The university of the street, you know?
Yeah.
I still learn. I was out last night. I went for a walk, and it was dark, and it's nighttime, you know, and I realized it's kind of dodgy out there. You know, weren't many people. I saw a few, you know, dodgy characters, and I thought, you know what, now that we're under siege from this virus, you know, we have to kind of pick your spots, you know, but it's always teaching me something, the city. It really is, and I'm very grateful to the city for that.
I think this, you know, this new COVID-19 scare that we're all under right now actually would be an inspiration maybe for your next album. I mean, you've been an expert at putting tragic situations to music. I mean, in 2004, you had a song called Cell Phones Ringing in the Pockets of the Dead about the Madrid train bombings. And you've had others that were, you know, equally empathetic for tragedies around the world.
Holy War, Holy War, which I think was on, I don't know what album that was on. It was either on World War Willie or American Ride, one of those two. But I write about the things that come to me that inspire me. And right now, this is a very dangerous time for people. You know, this is just a really completely rare event. You know, my dad's 102 years old.
Wow.
And he's doing, knock on wood, he's doing fine. He's in Buffalo, lives at home, you know. And he was born in 1917, at the end of the year. I asked him on the phone yesterday, you know, you were born at home. Was that because of the epidemic that was going on then? And he said, yeah, it was, you know, they refer to it as the 1918 epidemic, the Spanish flu influenza epidemic. But it was actually, it was happening in 2017. So he was born at home because of that. And now here, 102 years later, hopefully, you know, my brothers and sister in New York, in Buffalo, New York, are taking, they're doing their best to take care of him. You know, so he's doing great, you know.
Good.
He would go to my church every day, you know, but they don't have mass anymore. But, I mean, he's doing really well considering for his age, and, you know, concerned for him in this, with this epidemic because he's fragile. But it's fascinating to think that 102 years ago, he came in with you know, an epidemic, and knock on wood, he can survive this. But these are hard times and serious times for everybody, and I'm sure that it'll make its way into song, you know, for me. I'm sure I'll write about it because it's affected me greatly.
Yeah. All right, well, that's great.
My girlfriend's in Italy, you know.
Oh,
she
boy.
Went over there. She lives in Italy, and she was here, and she went back February 27th, just you know, to she had some things to take care of back there, and now she's stuck there. I don't know when I'll see her again, you know. So this is serious business, and I really wish everybody, you know, would hear this, you know, just a good luck, and please take care, and take good care of yourself and your loved ones, and let's all get through this. And music can be a real healer, you know. And so, you know, I'm listening to music all the time and playing it, and you know, hopefully the new album, New York at Night, can offer some healing vibes and stuff. And
amen.
During this hard time.
Amen. Let me finish on a more positive question. You know, something to lift our audience up. You've always been touring with many, many famous bands. I want to ask two related questions to that. What was your most unusual event that happened on tour, and what was your best experience on tour?
Well, there's been so many, you know. I mean, the first record came out in 1980, and within putting the record out, I had never played publicly with a full band. When I graduated from the University of Buffalo, I moved to Greenwich Village. I came with my guitar, And I got a piano, and I was playing in the club solo. I couldn't afford a band. You know, I was broke. And I would just get on wherever I could find an open mic, play. And I got eventually got signed. The New York Times critic Robert Palmer saw me play and wrote this extraordinary review. And right away, I got signed by a major label, Arista Records. And when the record came out, I had never done, I mean, when we made the album, that first record in 1980, I never, we made it in 79, I never played with a full band like that before. We made the album, boom, rehearsed 3 days, knocked it out in a week and a half, and next thing I know, I'm doing like a three-week tour across the U.S., clubs, small venues, you know, and we get to L.A., and I'm playing, I played at the Roxy in L.A. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mercury came out to the show. Grant Parker came out to the show, and unbeknownst to me, the manager of The Who, Bill Kirbishley, came out with a bunch of people from the Who business office, and I had heard that Pete Townsend was a fan of the first album, but I didn't believe it. I just thought it was some record company hype that someone told me, but in fact, you know, I got the next thing I know, I was offered a tour across the U.S. with The Who. So 3 months after this record comes out, next thing I know, I'm playing with my band in front of 20,000, 15,000, 25,000. That was just extraordinary to go from playing in a small club to 50 people, you know, getting signed to a major label, then to playing in front of a few hundred, and then all of a sudden 25,000.
Yeah,
that was extraordinary, and I'm a huge Who fan, so it's a great honor. You know, and over the years, that was a great a highlight. You know, they're friends to this day. God bless Pete and Roger. And, you know, I got to tour with Ringo Starr in his all-star band. I got to sing with Ringo on stage. And there have been so many extraordinary events that I've been really lucky. And what I would say to that is that, you know, there's something to be said for following your dreams. You know, follow your instincts, follow your dreams. You never know where they're going to lead you. And in my case, it's led me to, you know, stages all around the world. You know, I tour across Europe, North America. You know, I've not been to Asia yet, but hopefully I'll get there. But it's there have been so many extraordinary things. That, you know, playing with Lucinda Williams, singing with her, singing with Richard Thompson. It's just so many examples. And the great band I have, the great bands I've had. The audiences, the people I've met in Spain, Italy, UK, across Europe, people have become dear friends. You can't. When I was a kid, when I, you know, used to hitchhike to New York City, summertimes, you know, just to hang out for a few nights and hitchhike back, just to, you know, put my foot in the water of this music world here in New York, little did I know or think that it would lead to this incredible journey that it's been and continues to be. So I'm really blessed. And I would say to anybody, you know, follow your dreams. You just never know where they're going to lead.
Awesome. That's a great way to end this interview. Thank you so much, Willie Nile. Look for the album, the new LP, New York at Night, at your favorite retailer. Listen to this album. It'll help you pass the time, and it'll heal you like all good music does. Thank you so much for your time, Willie.
No, thank you so much, Aaron, for your kind words. You've been very generous, and your enthusiasm is you know, it really touches me deep. Thank you, my friend. And anybody, if you WillieNile.com, you know, go to WillieNile.com, and there's videos, there's crazy videos, me playing with The Who. There's a video of me playing with The Who and Bruce Springsteen. It's like 3 or 4 years ago. They were honoring the Grammys, were honoring Pete Townsend.
Nice.
And I was asked to come and sing 2 Pete Townsend songs. And at the end of the night, we all did Won't Get Fooled Again. I mean, can you imagine that? I got to be on stage, standing right next to Pete Townsend, you know, flailing away on his guitar, and Bruce Springsteen on my other side, you know, and we're laughing, having a ball. I mean, you can't make this up, so... Thank you, my friend. Here's to rock and roll. Here's to music getting us through this hard time. And thank you for your time, and God bless everybody.
Thank you very much, Willie. We appreciate at Power Popaholic all that you do, and keep coming out with music. We love it. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. All the best, buddy. All right. The best. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.